The idea that losing yourself in a million acres of untouched wilderness could also be a way of finding yourself. That's part of the rationale for America's national parks. But setting aside that much land as a public trust has been and still is controversial. Terry Tempest Williams is a nature writer and an activist on the front lines of the battle to protect public lands, especially in her native Utah. No one writes more beautifully about the emotional and spiritual value of wild places. She's just come out with a new book about the national parks. This one's called The Hour of Land.
I was raised in the state of Utah, where 5 national parks and 7 national monuments are commonplace. We took them for granted. Zion, Bryce, Arches, Canyonlands, and Capitol Reef were in our backyard, the land where our families gathered and we roamed free. We hiked the Zion Narrows and escaped a flash flood. On that same trip, my brother and I camped against a red rock wall, and in the morning when we awoke, a boulder had fallen between us. In Capitol Reef, we picked peaches from orchards planted by Mormon pioneers. Natural Bridges had the darkest star-struck skies, the place where I almost died falling off a cliff with 136 stitches running down my forehead like a red river and a lifelong scar to prove it. We learned early on we live by wild mercy. But it was standing inside Timpanogos Cave, a national monument, as an 8-year-old girl that marked me. We hiked up the steep mountain trail that rises 1,000 feet from the valley floor. We were hiking with our church group from Salt Lake City, just an hour north. We reached the entrance of the cave and were ushered in by a park ranger. Immense stalactites and stalagmites hung down from the ceiling and rose up from the floor, declaring themselves teeth. We were inside the gaping mouth of an animal. But it was the great heart of Timpanogos Cave that captured my attention. When everyone else left the charismatic form, I stayed. I needed more time to be closer to it. I wanted to touch the heart, run the palms of my hands on its side, believing that if I did, I could better understand my own heart, which was invisible to me. Suddenly, I heard the heavy door slam and darkness clamp down. The group left without me. I was forgotten, alone, locked inside the cave. I waved my hand in front of my face. Nothing. All I could hear was the sound of water dripping and the beating heart of the mountain. I don't know how long I stood inside Timpanogos Cave before our church leader realized I was missing, but it was long enough to have experienced how fear moves out of panic toward wonder. Inside the cave, I knew I would be found. What I didn't know was what would find me, the spirit of Timpanogos. To this day, my spiritual life is found inside the heart of the wild. I do not fear it, I court it. When I'm away, I anticipate my return, needing to touch stone, rock, water, the trunks of trees, the sway of grasses, the barbs of a feather, the fur left behind by a shedding bison.
Terry Tempest Williams, reading from her new book, The Hour of Land. Steve Paulson recently sat down with her to talk about the lasting value of our national parks.
Terry, have the national parks always been part of your life? I mean, is this something that's part of the family DNA?
It is part of our family DNA, and I would tell you that my first memory is in a national park, Grand Teton National Park, to be specific. What I remember is kneeling before Hidden Falls, the spray of the water on my face, with my mother on one side and my grandmother on the other. And I was kneeling down with cupped hands, drinking that cold mountain water. I'll never forget that. It's my first memory. And I think to this day, I still search for that feeling of home, refreshment, renewal.
Now, the national parks have a complicated legacy. I mean, they are more popular than ever, and some of them are practically overrun by visitors. And we should point out that not all national parks are wonders of nature. Gettysburg is now a national military park, and this is a place not only to commemorate the dead, but it's also, it's become a contested place where where different versions of the Civil War get played out. I mean, you write about your guide who was actively on the side of the Confederacy. I mean, she thought the wrong side won the war.
And I have to tell you, Stephen, my ignorance as a Westerner, or my own ignorance, I didn't realize how strong her point of view was until about halfway through. And I thought, aha, so this is why we are focusing on Pickett's Charge, where a tremendous amount of men were killed because Robert E. Lee would not give up his plans. And you see the fall of the South in that moment. It wasn't until I realized, oh my God, her saddle is the Confederate flag, the blanket that is supporting her saddle, that I realized we were literally in the point of view of the South. It was fascinating.
And again, I mean, she works for the National Park Service. I mean, this is not just some outsider you're talking about.
Well, she's a licensed guide, which, you know, is hard won. But this is the history of our national parks, of our battlefields, of our seashores. One story is not sufficient. There are many stories to be told in each of our national parks.
You write about touching the essence of a place. As a writer, how do you do that?
You know, I think it's always an attempt. And one of the things that struck me about each national park that I visited was that there was always a tender point. There was a moment where I thought, ah, here, this is where the heart beats for me in this particular place. I remember the vastness of Big Bend National Park, and I was so stunned for so many reasons. I thought, this is what I remember in southern Utah as a child, and I realized how much fragmentation has occurred because of the oil and gas development outside Arches and Canyonlands. And in Big Bend, there was a moment where we were at the very end of the canyon in Santa Elena. And honestly, if I ever disappear, I will be there. It was so magnificent. It was so still. It was so quiet. The shadows and light, the sound of rushing water, borderlands, sacred lands.
One thing I was curious about in that chapter on Big Bend, you refer to various notebooks, your turquoise notebook, your green notebook, your orange notebook. Do you actually have all these different color notebooks?
I do. I had this set of rainbow notebooks. You know, they were artist notebooks, blank notebooks. And I just thought, you know, we're going to be there for 14 days. I had 14 notebooks. So would you believe me if I told you I filled a notebook a day? That's how passionate I was about Big Bend. Honestly, it's my favorite national park right now, and I just reveled in every single day of it.
Do you carry around notebooks as you're out there hiking?
I always have a journal with me, and, you know, it's probably an illness, a sickness, but I can't take something in if I can't take my notes. It's like an artist's sketchbook. And of course, when I'm walking, I'm present. And when I'm sitting, I'm listening. But then there comes a point where I just have to write to qualify, to quantify what it is that I'm seeing, feeling, experiencing. And I realize, Steve, in Big Bend, the desert is not a void, but my unknowing. And I think it's that humility before landscape, so immense, so large, timeless, that we experience awe, humility, wonder.
I love that phrase of the unknowing. What do you mean by that?
It's just, you know, I think as human beings, we think we're the center of the universe as a species, and we're not. I just think, you know, when you go into places like Big Bend or Grand Teton or, my goodness, Gates of the Arctic in Alaska, it's so clear that we are one species among many, and I'm stunned.
It's so interesting to hear you say that Big Bend is now currently your favorite national park. I mean, because my sense is that the landscapes you are most drawn to are the barren ones, and especially the desert. Is that true?
I think that is true. I love erosional landscapes. I love being able to see out. I love the bare-boned architecture of the Chisos Mountains or buttes and mesas in Utah. And I love these landscapes of little water that Mary Austin talks about, where everything is brought to its essence. And I think including us, I love that. I get a little nervous when I'm in places with too much green, I must admit.
You know, for a lot of people, you know, the desert's a scary place. It's so forbidding. Well,
a scary place.
So you get scared there too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a harrowing place, but, you know, you're brought down to your knees, and I think that's healthy. Like I said, I get nervous if there's too many trees and I can't see out.
There's another line in this book that just blew me away. Wilderness is the source of what we can imagine and what we cannot, the taproot of consciousness. It will survive us. Can you explicate that?
We're a part of something so much larger. You know, I remember when my brother Steve was dying of cancer, and I remember walking in one morning and I said, "Steve, how are you doing?" And he said, "You know, I'm great if I don't start thinking that I'm someone special." And I think it's that, again, that humility that we're part of something so much larger than ourselves. And that, to me, is the taproot of consciousness. And whether we're facing our own death consciously, whether we're facing an immense mountain, to me, we touch the ineffable. It's that vibrating energy. It's the stuff of mirage. It's heat waves. It's ghosts rising from the fields of Gettysburg. It's what our national parks hold for us. It's our bedrock. It's what makes us Americans. And I know that's not politically correct to say, you know, but as citizens of this country that I believe is in such a crisis, spending the last 5 years looking at our histories, both political, natural, historical, really allowed me to fall in love with what is beautiful about this country. And what is beautiful is not necessarily all good, but it's what we are learning. It's how we're evolving to a deeper state of mind of the open space of democracy.
Terry Tempest Williams talking with Steve Paulson. She's the author of Refuge and a new book on national parks called The Hour of Land.